Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, a podcast by physics teachers for physics teachers.
I guess, or something like that. Yes, physics teachers like me, Thomas WP, a part-time, A-level mostly, teacher of physics, a little bit of Year 7 science on the side.
And physics teachers like me, Robin Griffiths, a full-time teacher of physics, all the way through from Year 8 to Year 13. And that's what I'm going to be doing next year as well, Year 8 to Year 13.
And physics teachers like Jonathan Shaw. Welcome back to the podcast, Jonathan.
Thank you, Thomas.
And you are on the podcast because you have won in the lottery of physics teaching life. You have managed to obtain, I'm sure through a lot of work, a large grant to furnish your physics department, £50,000.
That's right. We've been awarded £48,000 by the wonderful people at the Wolfson Foundation, and the school has agreed to put in £5,000 of its own money from various trusts. So we have £53,000 to spend.
Wow. So, Jonathan, I know there'll be a lot of listeners who'll be really intrigued by this. How did you go about getting a grant from the Wolfson Foundation, and why did they give that to you?
Well, I decided that the school was desperately short of physics kit, and that we were unlikely to get the budget that I wanted to change things. So I started looking to see whether there were any grants out there. And with the help of Google, really, I came across Wolfson, the Wolfson Foundation. And it seemed to me that the school fitted a lot of the criteria that Wolfson were looking for, in that we're non-denominational, non-selective, we're showing pretty good results, although we're a young school. So we ticked a lot of the boxes that Wolfson seemed to be looking for. So I thought it was worth a shot.
And I guess there's quite a few of our listeners will tick those boxes too. So if you do need some kit, it is worth looking around for these grants and get on Google. We'll put a link to the Wolfson Foundation, obviously, into the notes for the show. But I suspect there are probably other grant-making bodies out there who you can approach as well.
I'm sure there are. I didn't, but I'm sure there are.
So let's kick off £53,000. Let's start with the silly ones and the ones that you may not wish to follow. I'm just going to play you a quick clip from one of our guests.
And multimeters as well. That's what I came up with. And a personal one of a barista-style espresso machine would be on my list.
So, coffee machine, I think it's a brilliant idea, actually. Pressure, temperature, I'd vote for that, but we're knocking out the silly ones. The other ones that were suggested were another teacher. Can I just ask, Jonathan, are you getting £53,000 every year?
Sadly not.
And another technician. A technician was a suggestion as well. So those ones not on the table. And then there were a few that we didn't understand. I may try and speak to Helen Reynolds about this, but what were they, Robin?
So, Helen said something like a Jedi Force trainer, a ball that goes up a tube and demonstrates the uses of the M spectrum. I was thinking, the mind boggles. I don't know what it means, but it sounds fantastic.
And furry microbes for kids to catch. I mean, that's all wrong at the moment, isn't it, in COVID? Don't want that. But it must mean something else, mustn't it?
And we're not letting the biologists have any of our money.
Absolutely.
It's all physics.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to be honest, you just go out and get some roadkill. They'll be fine. The furry microbes sounded a bit biology-like to me, but I did like from Helen, the 12 kilograms, not mucking about, of silly putty.
12 kilograms of silly putty, yeah, that sounds like about the right amount. And then she suggested a Chinese spouting bowl. You're really testing us here, Helen. You may have to come on the podcast and explain what these things are.
I Googled a Chinese spouting bowl.
Go on.
It's basically, and I'm going to pronounce this wrongly, but it's basically a liquid version of the Chadley plate? So it's basically, it's a bowl and you rub your hands on the outside and you get resonance and you get these wonderful patterns in the water in a very mystical and beautiful way. It looks great.
Oh, that does sound great.
That is nice. Yes, very nice. Yes, okay. So that's a good one. Yes, and we did have some people actually suggesting there's Chladni plates. I don't know.
Chladni plates. Yes, I mean that's a funny one. I got my tech department to make me one this year. They're just a plate of steel, but obviously you need the vibration generator and the signal generator for it to go with. So I think, I think a good batch of SIGGENs you need for sure.
How many Sammy SIGGENs would you? We have one. But yeah. Do you think we need more than one?
Well, a lot of people have said for the required practicals, haven't they, you need a goodly number. And I always think about if I'm teaching sixth form required practicals, that kind of sets the number, because most teachers won't be using multiple sig gens in the lesson. But I would, you know, if I'm doing standing waves and I'm not using electricity through a wire and magnets, I'd have four sig gens. We have four sig gens that I can cobble together out of two good ones, two bad ones at my school. Four is good. I can have groups of four at A level because I have 16 max in my, well, so far I've had 16 max. That's not the top end of the school. I've never had to have more than four in a group for that. So four sig gens?
Four sig gens and little vibrators, if that's the right word for them, that go on them. Yes, I did that for the first time this year, that practical, but I only had one set up and I did a little carousel of some other things. I'd been playing with oscilloscopes and...
It's really nice if you set the task, can you weigh the string? You know, it's just really nice. Can you weigh the string? I know the mass of 5 meters of the string. Can you still tell me what it is? I really love that practical. I wanted to ask you something, Jonathan, actually. Is this just kit? You're not refurbishing the labs, because a lot of people have said refurbishing the labs.
I think that's a bit beyond the scope. We certainly haven't asked for the money to refurbish the lab. I mean, as we look into it, we realise, or it's increasingly obvious to me, that the labs are laid out in a way that makes some of these practicals incredibly difficult. We don't, the benches are all around the back. So thinking about where we would put ramps for the GCSE required practical, F equals MA practical, there's really only two places in most labs where you could actually drop the weights.
So do you have benches around the outside and just chairs and tables in the middle?
Exactly.
Yes, I suffer from that at the moment. I hate it. I think it's a very poor design. I feel your pain. And Andy Muggleton at 23_physics suggested movable benches to reconfigure the lab. And you could do that. You could get some benches in each room so you could have them on stools and benches. But I think that would blow your budget just supplying the benches and stools, wouldn't it?
I think so. I think what we're going to do is try and get lots of battery-powered kits. So we're looking at battery data loggers and that sort of thing that they can do, more that they can do at their desks rather than round the back with their backs to you and with all the chaos that entails.
Yeah, it's a terrible design. Terrible design.
Yeah, so Katrol, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right, at Katrol, K-A-E-T-R-O-R, suggested data loggers, and he said decent software with it and laptops to go with it and the peripherals and all the things, because data loggers are a big investment, but you do need to make sure, because there's so many rough, ropey ones out there, that just making sure that you get ones that work for you, that's really tough. And on that theme, actually, quite a few people suggested the various apps that are now available that you can load onto tablets and mobile phones, like at Physics Toolbox and at RWTH_Firefox, which are both Twitter handles for these app-based data logging. And thank you, Danel Hogan, for that one. The Stamazing Pro, that's the Twitter handle, which I like.
Stamazing Pro. A popular one that was mentioned last week on the podcast by Dr. Peter Edmonds was visualizers. That was mentioned by several people. I mentioned a friend of the podcast at Physics Rachel, who said visualizers in capital, so I think she was shouting it, but said, yeah, certainly must be good quality and try it out before you buy lots. And that's a theme that came up as well, is trying things. I really liked Kieran Holt at Holt Kieran, who suggested buying test power packs and shorting it for 30 minutes and seeing if they survive. Kieran didn't tell us which one won the battle of the power packs. So Kieran, please get in touch and suggest that. I'm sure I'll get in touch with Jonathan. And Jammy Physics at Jammy Physics said, test the power packs because the voltage readings are so adrift of the settings.
Well, anything's better than the power packs we have at the moment, where the knobs come off and get put back on, not lining up with the voltage. So they step to 3 volts and you've got 12 volts out. So we lose a lot of bulbs that way.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally get that. But one of the things I do with my sixth form early on is I get them to do the bulbs in parallel and measure the PD in the circuit compared to the PD on the power pack, just to introduce the whole idea of how current affects everything. So you're not always going to get, you'd have to have a pretty high spec power pack to constantly adjust its internal resistance, I guess, to keep the PD the same. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, it should be pretty close on an average circuit that you would use with year 10s, you know, with light bulbs. It should, you know, be pretty close to the PD.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of people didn't sort of commit to a particular brand or range. We did get a few, and thanks to FizzTech, at Fizz_Tech, who did tell us that the blue variable bench PSUs from SciChem were particularly good, and he sent us through a link, so we'll put that in the podcast notes so that you can follow that if you want to see other. I noticed they were about 150 quid each, though.
And that goes back to what Rachel's technician was saying. You know, if you're going to buy quality, Jonathan, get something that's going to last a long time. You know, we certainly had this experience. We went for cheap power packs. I think they were sourced from China. Most of them are fine, but some have just, you know, they're paperweights now.
Yes, well, we're desperate not to repeat the mistakes that were made when the school was started, and buy stuff that lasts.
And it's interesting, we sort of zeroed in on power packs because we did a poll on Twitter and got quite a few responses. Thank you very much indeed for responding to our Twitter poll, if you did. The power packs was at top of the list, definitely the thing that most people felt was really worthy of that investment. So I hope that gives you at least number one on your list of shopping there, Jonathan.
Definitely.
I wonder, I mean, how many are in a year group at your school?
I think we're 120 in a year group up to Key Stage 4, and then we have about 15 doing A-level in any one year.
Yes, yeah, so you'd want at least 50, I mean 15 good ones. You could have all your sixth form have one, and a class of 30 you could have pairs. And how often are you using power packs in two classes at once?
Yeah, I mean probably more often than you would think, but just because of the timetabling. But an added complication we have is our sixth form and our lower school are on different sites. So we're going to have to duplicate. And I've just been looking at radioactivity stores. We're going to have to duplicate all of that on the two sites. And the less bulky stuff we can move across. But power packs, I think, we'll need on both sites.
So you're going in for a radiation. That's going to be a big chunk of your budget, isn't it? Those sources are not cheap.
I'm talking to Cleeps very closely, and I'm trying to find out what we need to get. But yes, I think it's the test equipment as much as anything to make sure you comply with the safety regs seems to be the key expense.
Yeah, well, you do need a decent Geiger counter, and you have to have a Geiger counter that meets a minimum spec in order to be able to do the safety testing, as I recall. So yes, it, some people have fallen foul of that one. I think buying a Geiger counter that then they weren't able to use for the safety spec and having to invest in another one to satisfy the health and safety requirements. So, yeah, that was a bit of a gotcha.
I think we have a counter at school. We definitely have a counter. But apparently when it was bought, nobody realised they needed a budget for a tube. So the cheapest tube was bought. And when I took some thoriated welding rods into school, I got absolutely zero counts on it, which tells me something's wrong.
The RPS stuff from Cleeps is excellent, and there's that it tells you how to test the sensitivity of your tube using some sodium salts. And I discovered that ours just wasn't sensitive enough, like I said the other day on the podcast, and through the site team bought the correct tube using the health and safety budget, because we had to be able to check the sources. Like I said, for 2 years we cannot do this properly, we're not compliant.
Well, Samir from Cleeps is being very helpful, so we'll get that right in due course.
Yeah, we love Cleeps. Thank you, Cleeps. So if we end up with 30 power packs, we spent 4,500 of your budget already. So
yeah.
So I think there's plenty. Mr. Bonser, thank you, Mr. Bonser, at Bonser Mister, which is a great Twitter handle.
You can see what he did there, can't you?
I can. I see how he did that. Cosmic ray detector and radio telescope to stick on the roof, and metrological kit as well. So I thought that was great.
The wonderful Paul Cook, who's the head technician at Burlington Danes Academy, has been very helpful to us. He suggested that there is such a thing as a cloud chamber with a built-in refrigerator unit, so we don't have to worry about dry ice. So I'm desperately looking for one of those. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, the Institute of Physics has one in their foyer. If you want to go and steal that, that's very good. But so yeah, Paul Cook is he's just actually was given honorary fellowship of the Institute of Physics for his work with technicians in school. So he's an absolute star.
I've just seen another one that tickled me. Andy Muggleton again, 23_physics. Very strong Wi-Fi signal in every lab, and I think that's an underestimated important thing to have really good Wi-Fi. Is that in the scope of your budget, or is that outside?
It's actually not. The Wi-Fi is pretty good in the school, although it's not a school that believes in laptops in the classroom or tablets or any of that sort of equipment. So we don't tend to, it just tends to be for the teacher. It's a shame, because I think there's lots we could do with laptops in the classroom. But it's not encouraged.
Mr. Bonsack had loads more here, by the way. He's got a great list here. He's got a thermal imaging camera, which I have to say, I think it was a great investment. We bought one of those a while back.
Yeah, that is a good thing to have. I had that once. It was brilliant.
I think maybe we could get that out of the COVID budget.
You're out, yeah. So thermal imaging camera, great, yeah. And of course, at present, you can discuss all of those topical issues of thermal measurements with the thermal imaging camera, which is great. Dual beam tube, which I'm guessing is one of the Teltron tubes. A lot of people mention the Teltron tubes, multis, cross, things like that.
So how many tubes do you gentlemen suggest that we get? So a dual beam, a multi-cross, a diffraction tube, what should we be looking at?
Well, they're about £500 a pop, aren't they? So you have to think. There would be three I would use regularly, but we only have one of these in my place now. The fine beam tube, you can do a hell of a lot with the fine beam tube, an awful lot. You can even do the EM ratio. You don't have to. Is it the dual beam where you send it in a circle? You can do the EM ratio with the fine beam tube if you're careful. I'd love a Maltese cross, and I'd love an electron diffraction tube, but you know both of those have died in my school without me being present.
Nobody was blaming.
Just makes me sad that I had them to play with, and both of them are dead. So, I mean, those would be the three, but what is a dual beam tube? Is it the one where you send it in a circle?
Yeah, this is the one to work out E over M.
Yeah, so you can do that with a fine beam tube. You can get the radius of the circle from the arc of the beam across the grid inside the fine beam tubes. You can do, and I have done E over M. You can get it within order of magnitude, no problem.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I'd done the fine beam tube. Whenever I'd done the E over M ratio, it was with the fine beam tube. So I'd go with that and the Maltese cross, to be honest. I love the Maltese cross because I think it really is highly illustrative of the idea that electrons can be made into beams and then that they are different from light because they react to a magnet and so on and so forth. So it's quite a nice qualitative demo, I think.
Yeah, it is lovely, that moment when you... Firstly, when you charge up the cross and it makes it all blurry, but also when you bring a magnet in. I love that.
I don't think I've seen one possibly since I was at school, and I'm not even sure then. That was 30-odd years ago, 40 years ago. So you have a cross, you get a shadow on the cathode ray tube, do you?
Yeah, so the hot cathode is a light bulb, obviously, so you turn that on and you get the shadow of the cross. And then you start charging up the cross and it... No, then you start firing the beam, don't you? And it makes a shadow. And then you start playing with the charge on the cross. I may be wrong here because I haven't had one for years. But then you play with the charge on the cross. And then the shadow goes all over the place. Because yeah, if the cross is attracting them, the shadow behaves differently to if the cross is repelling them. And then you can just wave a magnet at it and affect the electrons and how that affects the shadow as well. But God, I haven't had one for 5 years. I'm losing my marbles. I can't remember.
And the shape is just tradition, is it? The Maltese cross?
I've never quite known why it was the Maltese cross. But
that is a good question. I imagine where it's a very fine angle, you get a different effects with the electrons. But I'm sure there's tons of listeners out there who'll send us a long tweet explaining the physics of it. So I think you're right. First, a fine beam tube, number one. If you can afford two, Maltese cross. If you can afford three. There's something for me about the electron diffraction tube and being able to show the wave particle duality of an electron in a school lab.
I waxed lyrical about it in the application to the Wolfson Foundation. The joy of seeing on my students' faces that a particle behaves as a wave. So I think we need to get one.
Mr. Bonsor, he still hasn't finished yet. You know, he's
he wants an observatory on the roof.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, observatory. I'm guessing, you know, the one thing I love about actually the looking at the stars, you can get a lot of mileage out of a pair of binoculars. Let's face it, you know, just looking at the moon with a pair of binoculars reveals detail that you just wouldn't know was there. And I've never actually tried it, but binoculars looking at Jupiter, you can see the moons. I've heard, I don't know if that's true or not, but I think, you know, anything that you can do to bring space a little bit closer, why not?
We're in London, not quite central London, but I'm slightly nervous that the amount of light pollution is just going to make any of this not worth the trouble.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can do it with binoculars, but you would need a means of holding them steady. You can't just hold them. You've got to have them on some sort of tripod. So, but yeah, I think in London, you might be able to see Jupiter, but I'm not sure you'd be able to see the moons. Then he keeps going, ultrasound machine. I had one once when I worked with you, Robin, and it was cool, but we didn't know what I was looking at. I think that's quite a lot of money for you'd need to be trained to use it. So,
and that's the medical imaging ultrasound machine, is that?
Yeah, I'm guessing so. And I think the biologists might get their hands on it, so I might avoid that. I really like the next one. Did you mention a mass spectrometer to the Wolfson Foundation?
It wasn't on our list, no.
But a reusable rocket, and I'm assuming he's not talking about SpaceX, but a reusable rocket is cool, like a water rocket, or you can even get rockets that use rocket motors. But again, if you're in London firing a rocket in the air, you may not be reusable. You're near a big park?
We're not too far from a park, actually. So I would like to get the kids out and do some science with rockets. So I think we'll definitely look into that.
Okay, so Black Physicists from America. These the at Black Physicists account, which is a great account to follow if you get a chance. But they had some great ideas, and they were going up in age from early years onwards. They said a greenhouse with clear pots and a camera, so you can do time motion of seeds germinating, which I thought was really nice. It sounds a bit biology, but actually when you think about it, I think there's some nice physics in there you could think about in terms of the time lapse photography and getting kids thinking about time in a slightly different way. I think there's mileage there. What do you think?
It sounds biology to me. I think my biology colleagues would get their hands on it. We'd never see it again.
Fair enough. Motion sensors. I thought that was quite an interesting one.
I think that's a brilliant idea. Motion sensors are fantastic. I mean, if you've got your data logging kit, there are some really good ultrasound motion sensors you can use and do live graphing with the kids where they have to walk in front of the motion sensor backwards and forwards and try and match a line you've drawn on the board. I love that.
That sounds brilliant.
This was a good one. I did like this. Dale Chapman at Mr. Chapman Maths. We won't hold that against you, Dale, but thanks very much for getting in touch. You said Maltese cross tube, another vote for that, but also Dynacar. And you sent us, well, it sounds like an extra from a Pixar movie, doesn't it? But it's actually, this is Dynacar. It's basically a car that has a wireless connection that basically does all of the things that a Dynamics trolley would do, but just communicates wirelessly with a computer, which is very simple when you think about it.
It sounds very interesting. It sounds great. But my question, I guess, which I'd be very interested to hear your views on, is, my instinct is I want to do this GCSE F equals MA practical in a way that looks as close to what the exam board suggests as possible, because that's what's going to come up in the exam, which means light gates, probably. What do you think?
I don't know whether I'd be absolutely married to light gates, because I think that most of them do realise, most of the exam boards realise that some schools don't have access to light gates and data loggers, so you have to ask questions as if students have had exposure to both types of measurements, sort of traditional ticker tape measures or things like that. So I correct me if I'm wrong, so this may be wrong, but I think they are, the questions they ask tend to be not light gate specific, if you get me.
I do see what you're saying though, but I think there's something lovely about a light gate and the way it separates out the time from the motion. But this Dynacar, it depends what you're trying to teach, doesn't it? If you want to know how the forces are affecting the car as it's pulled along, you can just plot it straight on the graph from the car. It'd be ideal. But if you're trying to teach about time periods and acceleration and that sort of stuff, maybe you want light gates. But I imagine light gates is quite high up on your list.
It is. Although the other thing is we want to class set of this F equals MA practical, and I'm not sure we could fit in a class set of trolleys and light gates and ramps. So we're thinking very hard about it.
So I think in defence of Dynacar, before I let this go, because I'm like a dog with a bone here, but Dynacar, it has collisions, of course. That's where it would be fantastic, because light gates can't capture collisions very easily, but this thing, of course, just gives you a full trace all the way through the collision. And also, it's 50% off at the moment, so come on, it's a bargain.
And we definitely want to get an air track. I think my head of physics wants one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love an air track. I love an air track. Just make sure you get... I mean, again, spend money on it, because... Yeah, there must be a good way of connecting the hose to the end of the air track. But I've not yet worked in a school where three or four times a lesson doesn't go pop off the end, and it's held. There's elephant tape there to make the sizes match better. There's always a problem, but there must be an official, more expensive way of connecting the two together. But yeah, an air track, it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, so I think they always use vacuum cleaner attachments, don't they? And of course, vacuum cleaner attachments are the thing, but because it's sucking, they suck the attachments together. When you start blowing, it blows the attachments apart. Who'd have thought?
Some physics there somewhere.
If only they studied physics at school. There we go. So data loggers, we had a lot of people talking about data loggers. Thank you, Physics Bird, Physics Bird 1. We had Daniel Horgan, who we always mentioned, said data loggers were really good, and make sure you look at the software as well. Make sure the software's fit for purpose.
Yeah, but no one's suggesting the brands they like. I mean, that's what we, Jonathan, really need, isn't it? What software have you worked with that works really well? I mean, I've used Sensing Science at two schools. I think that the hardware is pretty good and there's a large variety. The software is usable, but dated. But you can do an awful lot with it. I mean, the fast sensing is a revelation once you work out that's there. And there's a huge variety of sensors. I mean, I like the Sensing Science kit. It seems pretty robust.
Okay, so Sensing Science. Because I've never worked in a school where the data logging's been what I would call good. I don't know about you, Jonathan. Have you ever come across good stuff?
I mean, I've really only worked in one school. So my experience of schools is the one I was educated at and the one I'm at now, apart from a small placement. So no, I haven't ever seen data loggers apart from a bit of time working in a electronics lab in my youth. And actually, the people I've spoken to, I would say it's about 50-50 from the ones who say data loggers wasted money. We've got a whole load of data loggers sit in the cupboard because nobody knows how to work them or they don't work very well. And people who say they're brilliant. So I have to say I'm very confused by the whole thing, but I will certainly look at Sensing Science.
Right, I've looked it up. It's EasySense is the brand, and they're pretty good, and they do. I got $4,000 out of my school, and I tried to get a wireless module for them so that they could hook up across the lab to the computer, but I could not squeeze that extra £50 out of them. And that would be useful because it's very hard for my lab to do it live on the computer and have it on the screen. But they have an enormous variety of sensors. I mean, really anything you want.
Well, Paul Cook has suggested a make, because I haven't got the details in front of me, but they are battery powered ones and they sort of clip together a bit like Lego. And they look something that we're definitely going to look into. They look like a very good idea.
Oh, great. Well, if you let us have that, we'll put those in links to those in the show notes. And also, if you are a physics teacher and you're sitting there looking at your long, barren summer and wondering how you will fill your time, yeah, I know, you're not. But if you are, perhaps writing a blog, if you've been through this painful process of getting some decent data loggers and you fancy writing a wee blog about how to do this, I know there's a lot of physics teachers who'd really appreciate that, and we would certainly plug it hard here on the podcast.
We would, and I just think, I wonder if the B Spy V light gate that was mentioned by Rachel is one of those battery-powered data loggers. I'm quite interested in those. I looked them up after she spoke about them. They're only about £20, and I think they talk wirelessly to the neighbouring light gate to do the timing.
Before we diss everybody for not providing brands, Joe Miliano, Mr. Joe Miliano, thank you, Joe, for writing in on Twitter. He talked about dynamics carts and tracks with built-in sensors from Vernier, and he's given a product link, which we'll put in the show notes. And he also mentioned Pasco Scientific's Castle Circuit Equipment. And Castle is an acronym for something, which sounded a bit reverse engineered to me, but there we go. And that's a circuit kit that works with tiny, it's capacitor based, which sounded interesting. So he's given a couple of links for that. So they'll be in the show notes too.
Yes. Thank you, Joe. I like Miss Parsons at Parsons Physics. Indestructible wires. I think we've already mentioned that in the podcast. I think that is such an important thing. Wires that when the kids yank them out by the wire, not the plug, they don't fall apart after a few months. I think so. Molded wires, bought molded, I think is definitely worth investing in.
Yeah, here, here.
And then there's one more on the list, Robin. I've heard of these Charlies.
Couple of goons who've written in at Physics TP said you should buy a vacuum pump, at least one, preferably a class set. I'd ignore that if I were you, Jonathan, frankly. Yeah.
So a vacuum pump, they'd need something to use with the vacuum pump, wouldn't they? So can we suggest a vacuum cannon is added to the list? Support the podcast. Buy a vacuum cannon.
I bought a vacuum cannon from you, which I donated to the school, but the pump we have is pretty feeble. I think we'll definitely be upgrading that.
Yeah, good plan. Now, I think a decent vacuum pump, and I have to say, a decent vacuum pump is one of the things that I would put high on my list of kit to buy if I didn't have one. There's so many great demos with the vacuum pump, aren't there, really? Like the doorbell inside the bell jar.
Tunnocks tea cakes.
Tunnocks tea cakes, yes, your exploding spaceman, which we've talked about before, I think right back on the first podcast.
Boiling blood temperature water, that's fun. It's the same temperature as you can make it boil. That's what you happen to be thrown into the vacuum of space. Would your blood boil? All that good stuff.
I saw a really nice demo actually today. It just happened to pop up on my Twitter feed, which was somebody had put in little polystyrene balls with a fan into the vacuum jar. And then they started the fan and all the balls were flying around like crazy. And then they started the vacuum and the vacuum sucked all the air out and all the balls fell to the ground. The fan was still going, same speed, but nothing was moving, which I thought was really nice.
That's brilliant.
It was good, isn't it? And then they turned up the fan to the maximum voltage and some of the balls did start to move again, because the point being it's not a complete vacuum. There is some air in there, but not very much.
Yeah, a good strong bell jar to go with your vacuum pump, I think, would be ideal. That's definitely the something you need, a good vacuum demo to go with your vacuum cannon, which you already have. I don't think you need two vacuum cannons, although one of our orders is for two. We've had some orders already. I've already started buying the parts because the orders are flooding in. We have more than one listener, judging by the orders. So you know, get your orders in, because if we get more than 10, I'm going to have to enlist Robin into the manufacturing process. I hope you got your boiler suit, Robin.
You don't want to get the one made by me.
And do you recommend a pressure gauge for the vacuum?
Yeah, that's fun. I've thought about adding that as an optional extra. You can get them on eBay really cheap, and I think they're free postage, like they're like £7 on eBay. And it is nice because it does tell you if you have a good seal. So yeah, a pressure gauge is worth getting, and they do all come with a threaded hole ready for a pressure gauge.
Fantastic. So we're going to pimp our vacuum Helen with a pressure gauge.
I wonder if I should just offer them as optional extras on the website. So when you come to order your vacuum cannon, do have a look and see if there's pressure gauges there. And if you've already ordered one, there's many people and you wish to add it, just get in touch and we can sort it out.
We'll have a deluxe model.
I probably will add it as an optional extra. The deluxe 1.3.
The 1.3 deluxe will come with its own pressure gauge. It'll be something people write books about in future. The history of the vacuum cannon. we've reached the end of the list. There were some fantastic ideas. Thank you so much, fantastic podcast listener. You'd never disappoint. There's some great stuff there. And of course, if you've been inspired to think, oh, there's something I could tell Jonathan about, do let us know, and we'll certainly pass on your recommendations and brand recommendations to Jonathan as he sets about spending his money. Jonathan, I hope it's been useful.
Yes, huge thank you to Robin and Thomas, and huge thank you to the listeners who've sent in some brilliant suggestions. So I'm going to have lots to look at over the summer.
Yeah, you can have fun spending other people's money. It's always good.
So, yes, if you wish to share any more, it's the Twitter handle for us is @PhysicsTP, and Jonathan is @JonathanEShaw.
And, of course, you can find a contact form on every page of the website as well, sometimes more than one if you're lucky.
And the website is the.physicsteachingpodcast.com. And if you put /shop on the end, you can order your lovely vacuum cannon, you can get a beautiful sartorially elegant T-shirt, or, indeed, buy two nuggets, a cup of coffee to say thanks. And thank you to the people who do that. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, certainly is. Thanks so much for that.
So thank you very much for a brilliant idea, Jonathan. I think this could run and run. You must come back and tell us how you got on with the kit you bought in the future. That would be really good.
It'd be a huge pleasure. And thank you.
And thank you very much, Robin.
Thanks, Thomas. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast, and special thanks this week to Jonathan Shaw and everyone who sent in a suggestion. We couldn't do it without you. The podcast is presented by me, Thomas W.P., and Robin Griffiths, and produced by me, Thomas W.P., and this week edited by Robin Griffiths. Thanks, Robin. Don't forget to order your vacuum cannon to support the podcast. Although it's the end of term, there will be a bonus episode next week, so we'll speak to you then.